That's what she said. So anyway, welcome to World Famous Phil Henry Show podcast for today. Today is Tuesday. The date escapes me, but it's going to be a Phil only, and that's the way it's going to be today. And it's nice to have you with us here. Here for the El Pacifico in Southern California, the World Famous Phil Henry Show constantly, continuously broadcasts, never ends, always keeps going. A creative dynamo, sure. All of the things that you've come to expect and more. And a lot of people take me for granted, but that's okay, you know. What are you doing now, huh? Well, I'm walking on water. Well, you know, you've done that. Anyway, I'm not, I'm just screwing around. Welcome to our show. I put that in quotes because I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it'll be at the end of this. You know, I'm calling it a show now. At the end of this, it may be a crime scene. It may be American carnage. You know, we've heard that term. It may be, at the end of this, it may be an accident. At the end of this, it may be spilled bleach. I don't know. But right now, it's a show. Right now, it's a show. Or it's a presentation, or it's a forum. So here we are, and there are a couple of things. The reason why I'm going to do a fill only is for a couple of reasons. First of all, the one single reason I'm doing this is for a couple of reasons. First of all, I haven't done one of these in a while. Secondly, I may have some things to say. I may not. Thirdly, I don't feel like working too hard. Fourthly, that's all the reasons I have, just three. And fifthly, I still only have three reasons. So those five reasons. And meanwhile, I'm being distracted over my left shoulder here by a National Hockey League highlight reel that spans the entire history of the league. And I don't even, not that I don't like hockey, but I'm not that into it. And I don't know why I'm watching it. But I did see a group of players, no helmets. Now, that reminds me, when I was a kid, my dad, because he's Canadian, and I want to get into the whole thing about my immigrant parents, because my parents technically are immigrants, or were. They ain't immigrants no more, man, I'll tell you that. Yeah, great, Bob. Yeah, they ain't around, man, you know. I know. They were immigrants, not anymore. So, yeah, my father would take me to the hockey games. He'd say, let's go see a hockey game. And I was 10 or 8 or 6, whatever I was. It doesn't matter, because at that age, you want to go anywhere your dad wants to take. You want to be with your dad, and you want to learn all the things that guys know, and big guys. And they take you to things, and you see cigarette smoke and pipes. Back in those days, it was cigars everywhere. I don't know about today, what it must be like for a kid today, but back then for me, it was like cigars, you know. There were cigars, and there were big guys with tweed jackets and flat-top haircuts. Hey, how you doing, kid? Ha-ha. Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. And they were smacking the program from one hand into the other, and just a lot of yelling, you know. And nowadays, it probably wasn't even all that offensive. Today it wouldn't be offensive. Back then it was probably considered really racy. You know, hey, hot lips. Oh, excuse me, I didn't see the kid there. You know, somebody was blowing a horn, I remember, at a Dodger game. I must have been about 8, and somebody yelled, do it again, hot lips. And man, did that get a laugh. All of the adults, all of the degenerate adults just were howling with laughter. Do it again, hot lips. Anyway, he would take me to these hockey games, and God almighty, we went and see the LA Blades at the Sports Arena. The Sports Arena is gone now. The LA Sports Arena is gone. Somehow, some way, it got just taken away from us. I don't know what happened. I don't know when it happened. I don't know who made the decision for it to happen. It's gone, Jack. It's gone. I was talking on the phone to Big Don, my good buddy, my best friend, and he said, well, you know, they tore it down. I said, they tore the Sports Arena down? He said, well, yeah, it's gone, man. I said, it was there like three days ago. He said, well, they didn't think they had to consult with you, man. They destroyed it. It's dead, man, you know. I said, no kidding, because a lot of stuff happened in that building, the LA Sports Arena. A lot of stuff happened in that building. The Democratic National Convention happened in that building in 1960, where John Kennedy and supposedly his father bought a whole bunch of delegates off. Who knows? And I could care less. I'm glad he was president. That's just me, you know, betraying and divulging a little political bias there. But I didn't have a problem with Nixon. I didn't have a problem with anybody in 1960. I was 8 years old. I didn't give a... I probably liked Nixon then because both my parents were Republicans. And it was probably a very depressing day for them. But anyway, my father actually went to the... Democratic convention. Maybe he wanted to be a Democrat and then decided, well, maybe they wouldn't let him in, and then he decided, well, I'm going to be a Republican then. But I don't think that's how it works, but that's where they had that. And then they had the Lakers came to town. And when they built the L.A. Sports Arena, the Lakers had a place to play. The Lakers used to play at a place called the Pan Pacific Auditorium for like a season. I don't know. I was there a couple times for a car show. But beyond that, I don't know how they configured it for a basketball game, but somehow they did. The Pan Pacific Auditorium is where the Lakers played at least one season, maybe a couple, I don't know. An auditorium, you know. So it was like, and there's nothing at all sexy or the least bit sporting sounding of auditorium as far, well, maybe for boxing. From the Miami Auditorium. Now that sounds like a place for boxing. It certainly didn't sound like any place for the Jackie Gleason show. Live from Miami Beach, from the Miami Auditorium. Live from Miami Beach, from the Miami cafeteria comes. Anyway, so we would go to those games, and I saw my very first hockey games, and there wasn't anybody out there with a helmet on. And there were sticks and skates, the same stuff they have today, with one big, big glaring omission, no helmets. Not only that, no face masks for goalies. So it was very entertaining, and I mean this sincerely, it was very entertaining to look at a program, go to the game, and you'd get the program, and like no other sport in existence, hockey was a blast to page through the program and look at the pictures, the big black and white, 8x10, which were, shrunk down to make it into the magazine. But there they had the whole pictures, all the pictures, individual pictures of all the hockey teams. All these guys who didn't wear masks, didn't wear helmets, there were their kissers. And you've never, nothing outside of Frankenstein's laboratory had you ever seen anything like it. It was fantastic. They had busted noses. One guy's nose is going this way and the ears, maybe one ear's hanging off. Scars. All kinds of stitches across the face, but big glaring smiles with no teeth. They were just smiling like we're the happiest guys in the whole wide world. No teeth, one eye lower than the other. Because they were making what was, decent bank in those days. Oh, well, I shouldn't say that. This was a minor league team. I don't know what these cats were making. And I saw a guy named Willie O'Ree. He played for the Kings briefly. Willie O'Ree was the Jackie Robinson of the National Hockey League. That's what I think I heard that said, which would mean he was the first black player in the National Hockey League. And back in those days, some black people, not all, but some black people would try to, unfortunately, and I don't blame them, would try to claim Native American heritage because it would get them out of all kinds of hassle and bullshit with white people. I don't think Willie O'Ree claimed this, but I think some whites who really admired him said, he's part Native American. So, so it's fine. I know, I can see the look in your face there, Biff. Yeah, I don't know. You're a big hockey fan. Oh, I love hockey. I just never... No, he's an Indian. Oh, all right, thank God. And saw Willie O'Ree. And one year, one Christmas, I never forget, we were sitting there, had great seats. And of course, as a kid, my career, I knew what I didn't know that I wanted to do this for a living, but I knew what I was very interested in. The most interesting thing of all for me at a hockey game, at any sporting event, during the period, when the first period's over, the second period, my dad would say, well, he'd let me kind of wander around. Just come on back here when the things start. Yeah, Dad. So I would wander around and I would see the TV station from the opposing team that would be there to cover the game. And they had the little booth set up where they would interview the players and the big glaring TV lights and the camera and the guy standing there in the suit, with the microphone. And I thought it was fantastic. I would stand and watch this whole thing. I would stand and watch this entire thing take place, Just shocked by the whole sight of it. But what the hell was I going to tell you? Oh, one year, one game, we're sitting there, and it was a particularly fast and furious game, having a ball. It was around Christmas, and bang, you hear the puck. Ooh, it hits, you hear a lady scream three rows in front of us. It wasn't a blood-curdling scream, but it was a kind of a scream. And next to us, to our right, is a dapper gentleman, probably in his 60s. I remember he had glasses. And he got up, and he went down there. And he came back, and it turned out he was a doctor, and he was from Sweden. She'll have a black eye for Christmas. My dad's like, ha, 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 ha. Good job there, Heinz, or whatever. No, it's my name's Fred. All right. She puck had sailed over the glass and nailed her between the eyes. Not didn't damage anything. No, didn't hit her eyes. And the doctor had said she'll have a black eye for Christmas, basically meaning that it probably, you know, did a little bit of bruising, but she was going to live. That was a big moment. And then the other thing that would happen would be anytime a fight broke out, because I was so small, I couldn't really see, because everybody would stand up. And when everybody stood up, you're a kid, you can't see jack diddly, man. So my old man would pick me up and stand me on the seat so I could see the fight. So that was the early years of my sporting education. It was a phenomenal thing. But I bring that up to say, but I really wanted to tell you, because I was thinking about this today, and I thought that this was pretty profound. So I thought I would share it with you. At the time when I was thinking, I thought, well, that's very profound. I think I'll share with the audience. My folks came from Canada in 1949. Now, I say, and it is true, they're immigrants. Most people think when you come from Canada, though, it's like coming from another state. You know, well, I mean, well, technically they are. Sure, yeah, okay. What they do, drive the car over the border? Yeah, that's what they did. They drove the car over the border. Well, it's not the same. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I'm here to tell you, yeah, it is. Maybe not the way they got here, and maybe they weren't dirt poor, and maybe they weren't crawling or, you know, swimming across the Rio Grande or crawling under a barbed wire fence or whatever. Maybe they got here legally, and maybe that's what people mean when they get weirded out by immigrants, but I don't think so. I think that immigrants basically weird a lot of people out. Everybody likes to, you know, everyone talks about how, you know, my family goes back hundreds and thousands of years in this. Really? Thousands of years? Yeah, that's right. Thousands of years. Where were they from originally? Hungary. Well, how did they? Don't question me. All right. And so, and they say that just so there's no mistaking, my roots are American. Well, that's kind of a funny. Yeah, I was heard a guy say today, and it's very, very true. He said, look, the same thing that we have with Muslims, right? In other words, did it ever occur to us, and it should, that the slaves that were brought from Africa were Muslims, many of them. These people were taken from Muslim areas of Africa. The religion had spread into Africa and was practiced by a great many African people. As a matter of fact, I recall reading, it's a horrible story, but one of the slaves that survived this Middle Passage, this slave, these slave ships, one of the individuals that had survived that remembered hearing other captured people cursing the slave traders, cursing the people that had kidnapped them, and calling down Allah and his wrath upon them, praying to Allah and praying that these people that had done this to them would be punished. He recalls hearing this. This was in the hold, the slave hold of the ship. So where we get off thinking that this is somehow a recent occurrence in this country, or, for instance, some people love to tell you, and it is true, that Jewish people first got here with Christopher Columbus, Sephardic Jews, members of his crew. I believe that's probably true, although that we were not yet a country, but nonetheless, we weren't a country when the first slaves arrived either. And there were Muslims among them. So it could be argued that Islam goes back on this continent as far back as Christianity. Now, that's a fact. You can't argue facts. It's a fact. But these days, that's what we do, don't we? We argue facts. We argue 2 + 2. That it's 4 is now, well, that's one interpretation. What do you mean one interpretation? Well, you want it to be 4, don't you? Yeah, I'll bet you're real happy it's 4. It is 4. I don't think so. Not today, pal. Not today. Today, I want it to be 5. And I'm telling you, now that's the textbook definition of brainwashing, according to George Orwell. Forget about me or anybody that you know or anybody contemporary. George Orwell put that very scenario in his book, 1984. How many fingers am I holding up? Winston, you're holding up three. And if the state says it's four, and he says it's still three, and they zap him with another, you know, torture bug or something, you know. He says at one point, how could I possibly say it's four when I see three? So you still think it's three? Yes, it's three. I'm looking at three. They torture him some more. You know, they put him on the rack. Until finally, he's able to see four. He's able to feel truthfully he can say four. How many fingers now? He's holding up three, but Winston Smith says, there's four. And he's cured, you know. And you know what they do with him after he's cured? After he's brainwashed, then they execute him. They kill him. They said, we're not going to send you to your death as some kind of a martyr. We're not going to send you to your death believing the old ways. We're going to make you into a new man. You are going to be a member of the modern society, the new man. In the world of Big Brother, you will be an exemplary citizen. And once we do that, then we're going to execute you. You will go to your death believing what we want you to believe. That's pretty heavy. And it certainly didn't start out, you know, when I was talking about hockey and guys with their, you know, pucks in their kisser. But it kind of went there, didn't it? Anyway, kind of went there, huh? Kind of changed it up on you. So anyway, my folks came here from Canada in 1949. And I remember seeing the home movies of them when they crossed the California border, and there was the sign that said, welcome to California. There's home movies of them that survived. My mother's dressed up. My dad is in his chino pants with his straw hat. And they had home movies they took of each other. And my older brother and sister were with them. And then they showed the other side of the sign and said, welcome to Arizona. They were thrilled. This was great. This was the greatest thing that was going to happen to them. They were in America. And because they had come from Canada, I think we probably think that, as I said, it's like they were moving from one state to the other. That's not the case. It was a huge, huge move. They gave up their Canadian citizenship. They came to the United States and became Americans. And when they did become Americans, I remember the very morning, and I couldn't have been more than three or four, but I remember my mother saying, I'm an American now. Because she'd gone down and taken the oath, you know, the Oval Office, whatever the hell they do. See, I don't know. I was born here. I don't have to know, right? I don't have to know anything. I could just look stupid and walk around. Hi, I'm an American. You sure are. My mother had to learn all kinds of stuff, just like my old man. What this is, what that is, where this goes, where that goes, what the name of this guy is, what the name of that guy is. Half of this crap, you've heard it said millions of times, and it's true. The average American would know his ass from a hole in the ground if he had to take that test. Well, that's just too bad because we're lucky. You're goddamn right we're lucky. But my folks came here, and the joke in the family, the reason why I remember the day that my mother came home from becoming a citizen is we had a conversation that became well known in the family, and I think I've repeated it to you guys, where I asked her, is the president an American or something like that? She says, oh, yeah. She says, you have to be an American to be the president. I said, well, where's he from? She said, Texas. I said, I thought you said he had to be an American. That's literally what I said. And everybody gets a big laugh out of that, and frankly, they still do. But nonetheless, that my little brain was sort of percolating all the information she'd given me about becoming an American. So when you're the, and anybody out there listening to me who's the son or daughter of an immigrant, you know what I'm talking about. People who are not don't know, and I'm not saying you're dumb or anything. I'm not intimating that at all. I'm just saying you are removed from that experience. You cannot know what it is that those of us who are children of these people witness every single day of our lives. And I am telling you, you will never in your life be around, I have to say, for the most part, maybe there's some people that travel here and they're just lucky they got the hell out of whatever crap can they came to, and I can't imagine, but in my life and every single person that I talk to who is the son or daughter of an immigrant, it's the same thing. It's an amazing display of patriotism, an amazing display of almost cornball gratitude. My father would read Thomas Jefferson on the 4th of July to us at the breakfast table. He felt it was his duty, and it seemed right. Well, it's the 4th of July, right? You know, it's not like Christmas where we do presents and stuff. Well, what do we do, Dad? Well, fireworks and all that, but he'd get a book of Jefferson. Here's what Thomas Jefferson, he'd read it to us. Some of you might be thinking, well, Phil, you grew up in a very unique home. No, I did not. This is happening in immigrant families everywhere. I want to find out about this place. Let me learn a little bit about this place. When I was in Miami, one of the things I learned listening to people talking about Bill Tanner, who ran Y100, Bill Tanner is probably the father of modern contemporary hits radio. It was born in Miami in the 70s. Tanner found out something that was really a trip to find out. He says, you know, we've got a lot of people coming to this country. There's a lot of people here in Miami who are from here, there, and everywhere else. They like South American rhythms. They like dance rhythms. And so dance radio sort of started in Miami, but they want to be Americans. So that's why we're not just playing salsa and a lot of timbali crap. That's why Casey and the Sunshine Band came about, and groups like this that had a, you know, dance feel, but were very definitely American sound. They want to be Americans. They want to be American. They want to hear American music. They don't want to turn the radio on and listen to some cornball crap from Brazil. They're done with that. They're away from that. They want to be here and hear American music. But somehow, the synthesis between their desire to be American and the music they grew up with turned into what we knew then as dance radio. I won't say that it was the invention of disco. Disco is something else that came from back east, but it blended with all of that. This is what makes this country pretty goddamn special, if you ask me. This is culture. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, it's a melting pot.
Whatever, man. I mean, that term is so beat to death, I don't need to hear it anymore, frankly. I don't want to hear it. It's used in such a negative way now, but it is the creation of something else. In California, where I grew up, there's cats that play hockey. There's kids that go out and play hockey. How'd that happen? Well, there's Canadians living here by the thousands. And they came down with their sport. Now we got hockey rinks. This is California. This is Southern California. This is a desert. There's no snow here. There's no ice. There's no, you know, you don't grow up and go, let's go out to the rink now, boys, eh? You got to go find it, man. And yet there's kids that grew up here, play that game, and are in the NHL today. In fact, one or two of them, I just heard in the Predator Duck series, I think one or two of those guys, born and raised in Southern California. I just took a sip of Starbucks coffee that's been sitting here on this counter for 3 days, and it tastes fantastic. Now, I just want you to know that. The milk isn't curdled or spoiled. I didn't really want to drink out of that cup. I just saw it and took a drink and thought, halfway through swallowing it, oh my God, what have I done? But it tasted fantastic, and I am so, so, so happy. So these were my immigrant parents. Now I'll tell you something else. My father was not only an immigrant from Canada, he was a military veteran. He served in the Canadian Armed Forces. But when they got to America and they had children, they had two in Canada, they had two more here in the States, myself and my younger sister, Marianne. I remember going with my dad one day.
We're going to put a flagpole up.
See? A flagpole, Dad? That's right. And we go down to the flagpole store. I didn't know that the one existed, but there it was. And he dug a hole and he poured cement. My father did all this stuff, you know, that stuff that dads know how to do. My old man was building fences. I know how to use a skill saw. Probably, you know, saw my arm off or something with it. I can't build a fence. I'm a new generation of Americans where my whole thing was just doing whatever the hell it was that I wanted to do. I don't want to learn how to do that crap. Well, he's out there building fences and walls and shit, and he's building this, and he's got this flagpole in the ground and then an American flag. And we had to raise that thing every day. I'm telling you, this is the God's honest truth. See, I grew up steeped in Americanism and Americana. I grew up steeped in patriotism. I grew up steeped in all of that stuff. Probably more, I would bet you money, more than most kids native-born who have native-born parents. I bet big money that there was more America in my house than any other house on our block. Well, I damn sure know that we were the only family on that block where you saw a little kid, me or my kid sister. I don't think my father taught my older siblings this, but Marianne and I learned every morning we walked down that driveway with that flag and raise it. And then at night, who's taking the flag down? At night, we'd take the flag down, and I learned how to fold an American flag. Now, I know it's probably not a big thing, but I'm telling you right now that this was these were the things that I learned from immigrant parents. I don't give a damn if it's Canada or not. When they came over the border in 49, and they left behind them their Canadian citizenship, their Canadian identity, their family, although we have, to this day, we have contact with my family in Canada, my cousins. They became Americans. They became American citizens. And everything that was American, they embraced and wanted to learn about and wanted to teach us about it. And I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe it was really weird for a lot of my friends to come to our house and see a big, beautiful, carved wooden eagle, an American eagle, over our fireplace. You know, I don't know what they were. What's with Phil's dad? Jesus, you know. Hey, how you kids doing, huh? My father, my parents are Canadians. There wasn't a hint of a Canadian accent. I don't know where the hell they were raised. They were raised in Canada, but I never heard any of that whole organization. I didn't hear any of that stuff. It was always just, hey, yeah, Canada, Toronto. Where are you from? Toronto. You sound like you're from, no, what do you mean, New York? No. Yeah, a big carved wooden eagle, an American flag that we would raise over the house in the morning and we took it down at night. No, I'm not. This is not a unique thing. This is something that only kids of immigrants, only immigrant families understand what it is I'm talking about. And I think that a lot of people who, I don't know where people are coming from, man. I got no idea where they're coming from. Some of this stuff is garbage. They're coming from this place that immigrants are to be, you know, keep an eye on them, Charlie, because, you know, well, what? Well, they come from, you know, another country, and I don't know. Well, don't be, you know, xenophobic. I'm not xenophobic, whatever that means, but I'm looking at this guy. It's just he's all wrong, you know, and this suspicious nature, and we back it up with bullshit. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. Well, you know, they're violent. Oh, come on, man. Well, I got the statistics right here. Let me tell you, I've looked at all the statistics. I'm not even going to go. I'm not going there, and I don't want this to turn into something hyper-political, but you really got to get educated. And you'll realize what immigrants mean to this country and how they've been maligned, especially when it comes to this crime thing. Unreal. Unbelievable. I'm telling you, I'll go toe-to-toe. I'll debate it with anybody. Anybody. When it comes to this, the association that some people have drawn between immigrants and crime, it's a crime. You know, truth is to be respected. You got to respect the truth. You know, I heard what Ted Koppel said to Sean Hannity. He said, ideology now is more important than truth. What happened? Ideology is more important than truth. We're lost. Give me this stuff about how, will you believe the mainstream media, Mr. Hendry? I believe in what is, what my good sense and my education and my own research tells me is the truth, okay? And I happen to know that there are certain news-gathering entities and organs and organizations in this country that have been disseminating the news, and for the most part, not always, but for the most part, what they have reported has been true. And you'll pardon me, but I'll trust them a little bit more because I've used them, and I also cross-reference AP, Reuters. These are established, respected names. If they don't tell you what you want them to tell you, that's fine, but you can't call it fake news, man. You can't. It's more likely that Breitbart, InfoWars, Prison Planet, and all that other shit is fake news. It's just far more, as a matter of fact, we happen to know it is, because we happen to know that they're fed by Russian propaganda that they repeat. But I mean, you know, believe whatever you want to believe. But understand something. You're sacrificing actual reality. You have decided to, you've decided to live in a fantasy world. And you've decided to let the fantasy dictate how you behave. That's really the definition of insanity, if you want to. It really is. I mean, insanity is, you know, psychosis is something that afflicts people where their reality is shattered. They're living in a different reality. And that's nuts. There's no other way of looking at it.
Hey, you know, heard about Pizzagate.
Oh, come on, man. If you believe that, you're crazy. And, of course, we see the behavior. The guy that went in there with the gun? Tell me that guy's not nuts, at least in that moment. And he even admitted it. He even admitted it. So believe what you want to believe. Go where you want to go. Do what you want to do. Like that song, you know, by whoever the hell it was. But I forget. Oh, Mamas and Papas. Understand that if you're spouting a line of horseshit and you're trying to get people to think it's, to believe that it's real, people are going to look at you after a while and say, this guy's nuts. What'd you say?
Well, and the Pizzagate thing and whatever other horseshit that the Russians are selling that they've got everybody repeating. Oh, the latest, oh Christ, this latest one, that kid that got killed. I cannot believe the irresponsibility. And now Fox News has got one of their personalities whose name shall not pass my lips, not because I don't like the guy necessarily or because his name is foul or obscene. It's just I just don't feel like saying it. I think I'll just, you know, make you guess. I'll give you a hint. He's bald. I'm kidding. He's bald and he got fired. No, that's not the guy. Roger Ailes? No. God rest his soul. And I mean that. I'm trying to be polite and I'm trying to be, you know, seriously. Rest his soul. But now Fox News is engaged in this. And they even said, I read the article today, a guy, one of the people off the record, naturally, they feel like they got to go off the record with this. Can you believe this? One of the Fox reporters had to go off the record. They couldn't quote him direct. You know, they did not name him as a source, which a lot of people would like him to be named so they can fire him. He said, are we still pitching? This is the man's quote. Are we still pitching that shit? That was his line. You know, every now and again, a good guy comes along like a Shepard Smith and says, wait, hold the freaking phone, Jack. Hold the what are we doing? Well, the CIA, oh, give me a break.
Every now and again, when you get a voice of sanity, you want to drop to your knees and weep. You're so thankful. You're so grateful. I remember when Shepard Smith finally looked at the camera, he said, this is bullshit. And I was, thank God there's a reasonable man someplace. You believe anything you want. You can love being a conservative. I grew up with conservative parents. They were immigrants. And the first thing they did was register Republican. Because that was their socioeconomic status. But nonetheless, you know, that's what they did. But I can tell you, through both of my parents' lives, I watched them as they witnessed the country changing, and they changed with it. My father, the war veteran. My brother, the Vietnam veteran. Both of them expressed their strong desire that the kid brother here, the hippie kid brother, Phil, not join the military, because I was going to wind up going to Vietnam and probably get killed. My dad did not want me going into the military. He did not want me to join the military. My brother did not want me to join the military. They did not want to see me
get involved in what was happening in this country, to the point where my father made plans to have me have my ass shipped back up to Canada to go up to Canada, you know, the way a lot of draft dodgers, quote unquote, were doing. Now, that's a guy that was in Italy and North Africa in World War II. My brother was a Denang. So, you know, you can't question the credentials of people like that, can you? I don't think so. And they're immigrants. They're immigrants. And the reason why I bring this to you today is because it never struck me until today, really, that my parents were every bit the immigrant that anybody else coming from any other country is or was. I always used to say, and my folks used to kid about it too, well, you're from Canada. You can't really call that immigration, can you? Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think they felt comfortable considering themselves immigrants, considering the fact that you know, the way immigrants were and still are treated. But the pride that I saw them have in their new country, and the little things, like I was telling you, my old man sitting down and reading Thomas Jefferson, sounds pretty corny, doesn't it? But that's what he did. That happened in our home. That stuff actually happened. My father would read Thomas Jefferson because he figured, well, that's what we should do. He's the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence. I can still hear my dad, Marge, you know, hey, Marge, give me another cup of coffee, will you? Okay, right here. Thomas Jefferson said, and he would read it to us, like a cornball immigrant family. And he even went so far as to have a piece of Jefferson's writing rendered by a printer onto what passed for, you know, sort of faux parchment. My dad had these, and he gave them out to customers. I don't really know which customers. I don't think he just passed them out to God. They probably would think, you know, yeah, thanks a lot, Herb. Okay, Herb, here's some Thomas Jefferson. Read that, you know. Thank you for the purchasing this Frieden and IBM machine. And while you're on the subject, here's a little Thomas Jefferson. Oh, okay. Hey, this guy you got, the salesman, yeah, the Canadian, yeah, I don't want to, I don't think he did that, but I think in some cases he included them with, I didn't hurt him, let me put it that way. I don't think anybody thought he was a complete nut. My old man used to say that he was kind of a square, you know, he'd say, oh, I'm just a square. I want to go see a castle, you know, and all the other guys wanted to go out and get drunk. And he loved education because he was one of those guys that he didn't go to college. And at his particular time in history, guys that went to college were, man, they were something. They were something else. Guys that went to college, didn't matter. You could be a war veteran, man, but that guy went to college. That's how humble people were, to some extent. Yeah, now, you know, I did this and I did that, but that guy's a college graduate. And to be a college graduate was an amazing thing. And to have an education was an amazing thing. So because he didn't go to college, he was always trying to self-educate. But I don't think it was ever any good. You know, I don't think that it was good enough in his mind. So he always, that we had books and we had American history. We had profiles and current. We had all everything. My love of history, I have to say, comes from my old man and my mother loving it so much themselves, particularly American history. So this is just my little vote for, you know, immigrants. Let me put it that way. Because so much garbage has been tossed their way. And I thought, well, you know, that's something that I can lend to the jam session, because I'd never thought of it. I'd never, ever thought of our home being an immigrant home. But there was so much of that old-fashioned red, white, and blue flag-waving stuff in our house that it was almost embarrassing. Even way back, you know. That is it, man. That's all I wanted to say. I also wanted to say I'm a big fan of apples. Apples, the fruit. I just got to get that said because I diet, and I've been on now a 5-year diet, and I'm kidding, but it seems like it's never going to end. But I eat a lot of vegetables and I eat a lot of fruit, and I bought 2 bags of apples today. It's the greatest thing that I've ever done in my life, buying those apples, and I will forevermore be grateful that I bought these apples. And I ate a whole bag of them, and I've loved apples ever since I was a kid. And no, they don't destroy my guts, and no, I don't feel like I have to go out in the street now and just, relieve myself over people's front lawns. No, I'm everything's fine so far. But God damn, are they good, man. So here's one for the apples of the world. Here's one for all of you apples out there, half-eaten or otherwise. We'll be back to our regular show tomorrow. This is a Phil only. This has been a presentation of the Phil Henry Show. Shout out to Guy Boucher, head coach of the Ottawa Senators, whose picture I put on Twitter today. Guy Boucher is the head coach of the Ottawa Senators, who I guess they'll be playing today against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Penguins can wrap it up. I think the series is 3-2 in favor of Pittsburgh, and they just destroyed Ottawa the other night, 7-0. But Guy Boucher, I wanted to bring up to you because this guy, somebody said he looks like a James Bond villain. He's handsome. He's got the kind of wavy dark hair. And, you know, he's French-Canadian, so let me say, you know, he's got a degree in sports psychology, but he has the one thing that really renders him as the James Bond villain. He's got this V-shaped scar on his cheek. He looks like he's been in a sword fight. And he's a very intelligent guy, and you can see it in it. You don't even have to turn the sound up when you watch this guy talk. It's very slow, and it seems very measured. And he looks around, you know, not at anyone in particular. But we'll see what happens in the next game, you know. Comme si, comme ça, eh? You know what I mean? Who cares, right? At this particular point, who gives a you-know-what? Go out and have fun, my friends. And I got to thinking about James Bond villains, and somebody said, oh, yeah, the James Bond villains, they always have some physical problem, and it generally had to do with James Bond. I said, yeah, you're right. I said, remember the guy? I don't know who it was. Maybe it was the guy in Casino Royale, the remake with Daniel Craig, and his eye wouldn't stop tearing up, right? And, oh, yeah, he had the destroyed tear duct. Yeah, I think James Bond, like, shot him in the face or something. Okay, so that's one guy pissed off at him. Then there was another guy who had another, oh, I know, Javier Bardem. Is that the actor? He had taken cyanide, and it hadn't killed him, but it had eaten away the inside of his mouth. You got to really have some kind of a problem and also be very talented to think up stuff like that and put it in a script. So he had this prosthetic, basically teeth and gums that he would pull out and would cave his face in when he did, and he looked like a real ghoul. That was fantastic. And then there was another guy, and then I was kidding with the audience, the pre-show. There was another guy that walked around with his finger in his nose, and he, hey, Bond, do you remember me? Oh, yeah. Yeah. You jammed this finger up my nose. I can't get it out. I'm going to have my revenge on you, Bond, of course. So, here's one to you, or here's one for you, Guy. And by the way, it's spelled G-U-Y. Down here it's Guy, but that's okay, it's cool. I'm not going to tell some guy with a scar on his face what the hell to do. I wonder what happened. Did he take a skate off the face? Good God, what a sport. It's a lot of fun, you know, hockey, and I love to play. Now, you were out last week. Why? Oh, someone jammed their skate in my face, and it took like 3 days to pry it out. But, yeah, I can tell your face is Jesus. But no, it's okay. I feel good. I feel right. It's Saturday night. There was a guy with the Florida Panthers named it wasn't John Van Beesbrook. I forget who it was. But this dude, good God, yeah. This cat took a skate to the face in the second period, had to go into the locker room and get stitches in the roof. Think of this. Stitches in the roof of your mouth? Yeah, I don't know, you know, maybe in football, too, it happens, but stitches the roof of his mouth. How you feeling, Billy? Yeah, I'm okay, you know, to go out play last period, you know, play, and where's this guy from, like, Transylvania? I'm good. Bless your little pea-picking hearts. Thanks so much for listening here today on this Phil Only, okay? And this is executive produced by Phil Henry for Siempre Incorporated, all rights reserved on Podcast 1. We'll see you again, as I mentioned, tomorrow. Now, let me see, what else do I got to remind you cats of? Get over to the bar fight. God, I forgot to tell you about the bar fight. It's over at facebook.com/PhilHenryFans. Vote for your favorite bar fight participant. Write down in the comment section there why you think that person's going to win. And then stick around to see if you win yourself a download. We'll be drawing for that on Thursday. All right? That's the bar fight, baby. And this is semifinal number two between Margaret Gray and Bob Green. Yeah. What a jam.